Good morning, and on behalf of Montega, a warm welcome to today's earnings call of the Apontis Pharma AG following the publication of the Q3 figures of 2023. The management will speak in a moment and guide us through the presentation and the results. Kindly note, by now every participant is in a listen-only modus, but after the presentation, we will move on with our Q&A session, in which you will be allowed to place your questions directly to the gentlemen. We're looking forward to the presentation, and with this, I hand over to the CEO of Apontis Pharma, Mr. Bruno Wurschlegel.
Thank you, and dear participants, a very warm welcome from our side for our Apontis Pharma Q3 2023 earnings call, and let us briefly introduce the team.
Good morning from my side, Thomas Mills. As usual, I would like to give you in the upcoming moments some information about business development progress and also some information about market access peer cooperation.
And to my left.
Good morning, my name is Thomas Zimmermann. I'm a CFO of this company since 2 years, and I will guide you through the Q3 results of the company.
And my name is Bruno Wohlschlegel, and as most of you might not know me, as I'm in the position since September 1st, I would like to give you a bit more of an overview about myself, my experiences, and maybe some of all the main reasons why I joined Apontis Pharma in this situation as a CEO. Well, actually, I'm a chemist. I was trained in drug development, but my first position in my professional career was being a sales rep in a German pharma company. And as an interesting fact for me, I started to sell single pill combinations in those days. So the first combinations in the mid 90s were combinations of beta blockers and diuretics, or ACE blockers and diuretics. And when I came across this opportunity, I thought maybe that feels a bit like coming home, and I think it was quite a fast decision from my side to engage, and I will later on share why. Okay, what are my experiences? Sales rep for 3 years. I had the pleasure to hold several roles and positions in the pharmaceutical industry that are important for a company to thrive, be it sales rep, product manager in the national market, global strategic marketing, business unit heads in several business units, general manager for small country like Portugal, general manager for a big country like Germany, but also head of Europe for a pharma company, about 2 billion sales, 1,600 employees. But honestly, pharma is pharma, and you might ask yourself, what is the common denominator of all of this, and why did Bruno Wohlschlegel join Apontis? The common denominator is medical need and the potential to answer a medical need with a very good portfolio. So when I came across this opportunity and I was asked if I would join, I looked at the portfolio first. I saw the medical need, which is obvious and obvious since years. And so a huge medical need, a portfolio that is able to cover this need, and obviously a very purpose-driven team. This is what I could see from the outside. And this was the reason why I decided to join. Of course, we look at this company I looked at this company as a growth opportunity. I'm speaking about myself here. And that's why it's probably interesting for you to see how we together as a team here will try to leverage this growth for patients, for investors, of course for customers and prescribers, but also for this company in the right way. Without further ado, let us jump. Before we go to the next slide, you can see on this overview 2018 to 2024. Apontis is a five-year-old company, and it really thrived and built a portfolio which is amazing, I have to say. Apontis 1.0 was the foundation. The IPO happened in 2021, And we will talk a lot about this today. 2023 is the year of transformation, but a transformation should not last too long. 2024 will be a year of growth. That's what we consider a good trajectory for this company. And I will try to outline how this might happen. So if we go to the next slide. Ah, no, that's okay. Good. You might be interested in the 60 days analysis that we performed together here in this company and that I drove, obviously, as a new member of the management team. And I think there are two big blocks in this, yeah. On the one hand side, we have a really promising value proposition, which means we have this high medical need. I already mentioned it, but I think it's worth to mention it again and again. And this goes across target indications. We have a broad portfolio, for sure, the broadest portfolio in this area in Germany, for sure. And already today, we could be able to serve 5 million patients in need in Germany. Of course, this is the potential. We have very strong scientific evidence, and for those who follow the company, you might know that this evidence grew over years and meanwhile came to a level. And this was another reason why I was so convinced that even a big phase three study published in the New England Journal, the SECURE study, could demonstrate an enormous effect on the outcome for patients after myocardial infections taking a single pill combination instead of loose combinations for their disease, which is probably one of the biggest news in cardiovascular disease over the past years. Guideline recommendations followed. So also in 2023, several important guidelines picked up this evidence and said, okay, first choice in those indications is a single pill combination. Payers start to kick in, they start to support this development, and you will hear more about this later from Thomas Mills. And it's absolutely clear that if we follow up on our portfolio, there are growth opportunity not only in Germany, but also beyond 2026 onwards. The first thing you see when you enter a company, and it's more something like you feel, yeah, is the organizational engagement, yeah. And what I could spot immediately, and this was almost a surprise because this is not a simple, this is a difficult situation for the company. There's a high motivation across organization, and there is a really strong commitment towards purpose and the single pill concept. And honestly, kudos to the former management team. This is absolutely outstanding achievement. And this is not fishing for compliments. I saw many organizations, I saw many German organizations, and this is probably the top organization in terms of engagement. And there's also an engagement survey that shows the same high motivation, intrinsic motivation, and a strong commitment. Okay, if we come to the point, but now you might ask, well, if all of this is perfect, why are the results not perfect or far from perfect? And actually, I think the team here shares the frustration that you may feel about your investment that you did in the past, or maybe your question marks about the future development. So let us dive a bit more into the root causes of the disparity between prospect, value proposition, team engagement, and results in 2023, at least, yeah. To make a long story short, I think, or no, actually we analyzed it, the go-to-market model, which means marketing, sales, all activities that target customers and prescribers, has distinct weaknesses. Yeah. And I give you some explanations for this. Yeah. First of all, the single pill concept is a great concept. And there is this idea of having an umbrella concept to talk about single pills, and to use this to convince prescribers to prescribe. the idea might be right, the strategic approach behind might be right, but if this strategy kind of takes out a clear life cycle strategy per single brand, it might fall short on results like launch uptakes or life cycle management for existing drugs. And this is probably a finding that we have here. So we will have the opportunity for question and answers later on, but I hope you get the point here. Don't hesitate later on to ask for clarification. Given the structure of this company, additional communication channels are hugely underdeveloped and not integrated in one system. Yeah? Well, the companies that thrive nowadays in pharma, or since many years already, were able to build, some call it multi-channel, omni-channel, but for sure an integrated communication and sales and marketing concept. This company is very much focused on the sales organization, which was probably a good decision years ago, but it has limitations. So it hindered this company so far to set up an all-encompassing system, which is much more flexible and of course can create more contacts. I think the flaws of this go-to-market model came much more into play during and after the pandemic, which came for Apontis Pharma, as for most of the other companies, with a loss of call capacity, given the same amount of people in sales. So minus 20%, more or less, for Apontis Pharma, like for most of the other companies, which means there is a lack of efficacy. One could say it's 20%. But if this is combined with a very broad customer base, this leads to suboptimal frequencies in high potential customer groups in more than 20%. So the efficacy you lose is not 20%, but even more. So if you cannot contact a doctor or a prescriber more than in between 8 and 16 times a year, it will be very hard to make an impact. If you go below this threshold, you work a lot, but you might not be able to develop your brands. So this is another reason why we see results which are not what we all wish they should be. And to not make too many detailed points, of course, whenever a system runs for years in the same way, Salesforce excellence has room for improvement. This is the go-to-market part of the analysis. And of course, we have other reasons which will be mentioned later on, like tender, business, or out-of-stock situations. But those are the things I think that we will address, of course, with highest priority. So then I think we can change to the next. And to give you a flavor how a development will look like. So we have the status quo. This is actually the repetition of what you saw on the previous slide. Life cycle approach is not existing for many brands or for the brands, for specific brands, which then cannot grow adequately. The communication channels are not integrated and in the right balance. The loss of call capacity, the broad customer base that dilutes impact, and the Salesforce excellence points. If we look to the new model, and this is what we are talking about today, and of course what we will implement seamlessly in the upcoming month, we will work with specific single pill campaigns. So specific brands will be picked, and we will ensure that we pick those that are able to grow most. We will implement an integrated multi-channel communication system with a Salesforce as a central point, but of course with other elements that are fed by the right resources, and all of this will be integrated. Yeah, same message in different channels working together which then helps to increase contacts. The sales force, and that's a very important point, even though being smaller in the upcoming, well, in 2024, so to say, it will still be a substantial sales force, and they will focus on the most valuable HCPs, healthcare professionals, centers, slash prescribers. What does this mean? If you visit more than 20,000 doctors, you already saw the result. The threshold is not reached to make an impact. In addition, you might, as a company, visit too many customers that don't have the potential, yeah, or that will never start your treatment. If you have means to identify very specifically those centers or doctor's offices or HCPs themselves that have the potential, you can target a smaller sales force to a group, but with more impact, because you can have the frequency you need. You know that those are valuable targets, and when you convince somebody, it will not end up in a handful of prescriptions, but of course in a multiple of this, because those centers have the potential, they have the patients, and if they are convinced to use, for example, a tool like the single pill finder to screen their patients, they will thrive for patients, for us, and for you as well. Up-to-date commercial excellence methods, let me not go into too many details here, but believe me, there are methods we can implement which will lead to short-term improvements in the way we steer the organization, we help the sales force to succeed. And these are, I don't want to call it quick wins, but some of the measures will probably be quick wins for us in this area. Yeah. And there's one important additional point. We will much more leverage payers collaborations and medical peer groups. So we have, with Thomas Mills, we have an outstanding expert in market access in Germany, probably one of the most skilled ones, but he's one person only. Yeah. If we are able to invest more resources in his team, we will be able to negotiate more collaborations with payers, which will be extremely helpful for our business. And you will see some examples later on how he and his team, or he himself in this case, already managed to come to very good results with major health insurances in Germany. The same holds true for medical peer groups. One way to address doctors is to address them directly as a company and to help them to understand that they should change their behavior, which we will do and which will be very effective. The next way to do it is to help doctors to leverage the discussion and exchange around the single pill concept and single brands, if needed, in their own peer groups. So you can think about it like expanding upon this pharma towards the community. Yeah? And even also in this case, there are very specific ways to do it. And the good message here is, let's say this way, you cannot do it with a portfolio which does not count in terms of covering medical need. But you have an entry ticket to the medical community if you have a portfolio like Apontis Pharma, and you are able to cover a super important medical need for many, many patients. So the scientific backing of the portfolio and the single pill idea is the entrance ticket to medical peer groups. And this is something we will foster a lot in the upcoming months and years. Okay, the outcome in short terms, without making forward-looking statements, but we will see a faster launch uptake for new brands, and we are about to launch 3 new brands this year still, yeah? So 11 in the market, 14 until end of this year. And we can maximize, of course, the life cycle for these brands, yeah? So if we have a brand on a good level, we will always find ways to push more, yeah? we will increase our share of voice. You might think, if we reduce the overall amount of sales representatives, how can we increase our share of voice? This will be done, first of all, for the share of voice in the high value targets, in the high value centers, high potential centers. That's one thing, and this is something we can easily do with less sales representatives, but it will also be backed up by all the other measures that we put together in order to maximize communication. Higher contact rate per HCP, I mentioned it already. This will result in stronger growth rates. We did some analysis on the sensitivity of calls to the brand and outcome, and we can clearly see small numbers still, but we can clearly see that our products are highly sensitive to direct calls by sales reps. It sounds like a no-brainer, but if you talk about an umbrella concept only, it's different. Yeah, and this is a big change we can make like this. Yeah. So high efficiency gains and fast, flexible response to opportunities and challenges. A good go-to-market model is able to react fast on changes, be it a market change or be it, for example, that we grow fast with a specific brand. And if we could add more resources, we could grow even faster. A good model allows this. And we will build such a good model in a short period of time. Impactful additional trigger for single pill prescription. I already mentioned the payers collaboration. We will use medical education, and this will all add to the same objective, fostering growth for the right brands and for the overall portfolio, of course. And with this, I go to kind of something that looks a bit like a timeline, but it also gives you an insight on how this company will evolve. So we come model-wise, go-to-market model-wise. Yeah, we come from the status quo. We have a pretty static model, which was for many, many years the standard in pharmaceutical companies. Quite a big sales force. Most of the resources focused towards sales force and direct contact to prescribers. I explained why we need to transform this and how we do this and what the outcome is, but I want to summarize it here. The first thing we think about is how do we need to change the model to make it successful? So we don't start by savings. Yeah? We said, how does this model need to look like to be on par with the best companies in this area or even better? And this is the prerequisite for everything we do. Yeah? We can only build a model that holds a future perspective. So we will redesign for efficacy. We will focus on high value accounts and customers, and we will implement the multi-channel approach as I outlined before. And this will help us to grow top line. Yeah? In a sequence, go back. Yeah, okay. The second point is, and this is a duality, it sticks together, is we will also shape for efficiency. Yeah? It comes as a second step here, and it comes as a second step from a conceptual point of view, but it will be done in parallel. So if we design the right organization, we will, in a sequence then, almost at the same time, reduce costs by downsizing the organization according to the new model. So whatever we cannot use or don't need to drive and set up this new model will be reduced. It will be mainly a reduction in headcount. So this allows us to do two things at once. We will set up this company for future growth. And at the same time, we will save the costs that we can save to come back to profitability as soon as possible. Our plan is to make this happen for sure in 2024. So that if this transformation is done and we will speed up this process, we will come to a point where we have continuously profitable growth, and a model that is able to be adapted to the market environment or to be scaled when we have new growth opportunities. And this is actually the journey that we already started. So yesterday, we had the first discussions with the Works Council here in at Apontis Pharma, and they already see the necessity to move forward, the necessity to change, and we are pretty positive at this point that we can do this transformation in a short period of time. So restructuring this organization will be an effort that we start as of today. And building the new model will go in parallel, and we will start working in a new mode already in Q1 2024. And we will, of course, optimize the system and the organization. And for, well, in this case, you can call it, I make this statement, mid of next year, this is an absolutely well-working organization with everything we need in order to thrive. So if we think about effect sizes and timelines in pharma, if you start to do the right things on a broad base, the effects will come with a 6 to 9 months delay. Nevertheless, we will measure very clearly based on KPIs how our progress looks like over time, and we will change or pivot if we need. And this is the advantage of such an organization, we can do so. Yeah. Okay, and from this kind of development of the organization, I give you a glimpse on how such a new organization looks like, and we can go to the next slide. And this is a sketch, yeah. It's not a marketing plan, and we will of course now design our operational plan for 2024, but this is the principle according to which this company will operate. Yeah, we will look at the overall universe of customers and of course the valuable customers, most of them physicians, prescribers with a lot of potential because they treat a lot of patients. But we will also look at patients. I don't say we do direct to patients campaigns immediately, but we need to better understand if there is a lever and how we can leverage it. Yeah. And we will also serve other stakeholders that have a high interest, like the payers, to help us to thrive because they see a clear benefit. Yeah. So we have to take this momentum of new evidence, guidelines, payers that are ready to go with us and partner with us, medical community that starts to understand the value of this concept. And of course, we back this up, or we do this with a sales force, and you can see it. This is just a sketch, but the sales force will still remain the single most important tool we have, but we will use them and we will help them to be successful in a different way as in the past. Medical marketing, I think it's self-explanatory. The right communication is important. We look at market access, as already mentioned. Direct marketing will be part of everything we do. We will back up the activities of Salesforce to ensure that the right contact rate can be reached and it can be used for very specific things like launch activities and so on. And of course, the HCP and HCP co-development and peer-to-peer and the medical community will play an important role as well. So putting all of this together like this allows us, and I come back to this point because it's such an important one, allows us to allocate resources in a pretty flexible way. So we will have a smaller sales force from 2024 onwards, but if we have growth opportunities, we can adapt the size, for example, with external support, which was already done in the past, but they will all work according to the same principles. And those principles will have more effect than they had in the past. Yeah? But we could also invest more in medical marketing or market access. So this flexible model, I think, serves two goals. On the one hand side, It boosts efficacy when needed and wherever possible, but it's very efficient. Yeah? And this is something that you're probably also interested in. Is this a model that we can afford? Yes, this is a model we can afford, and it's a model that saves a lot of money as compared to the static model we have now. So this is actually the idea, not only the idea, it's more than an idea, it's the concept which we will start to implement without further delays, based on the negotiations with the Works Council. But as I said, I think there's a common understanding we need to move forward. And just to give you a little glimpse that this is not just a nice idea that I brought with me and the rest of the team is still somewhere else, we go to the next slide. So with effect of November 1st, out of the 8 positions in the management team, if you include myself, 5 are newly staffed. You see Thomas Mills, you see Thomas Zimmermann for good reasons sitting here, and you see Susanne Endres, which is actually a cornerstone for Q&A, as a quality drug safety and regulatory. And I have to say I'm very relaxed since the day I met her. I think it was day 2, and I could see that we have a top-notch system in place, which helps us, of course, and is important for a pharmaceutical company. But you can also see that we newly appointed HR to the management team. Susanne Böhm will head this. At the moment, she's on maternity leave, but we have a very good substitute, Julia Machmaszewski. Dr. Andrea Rockstroh will lead the medical team. Anne-Karina Niemeyer is head of marketing since the 1st of November, and we looked for an external person to lead the sales force ad interim. Jörg Schmitz is a highly experienced sales expert. He learned his job at AstraZeneca and Novartis, and whoever was in sales once, I was there for 3 years, knows that AstraZeneca and Novartis are machines. Yeah. The good thing is we could already see that also the sales force is pretty keen to talk about single products as well. And I'm very confident that with this new team, we will be able to seamlessly plan, implement, and execute the changes that we foresee. You can also see that CEOs like to talk a lot. And I hope I didn't go over time here. But with this, this is the concept, and this is the plan, and this is what we will implement to come back to profitable growth, that we can continuously increase over the next coming years, according to the big potential we have. So, and with this, I hand over to a part which is the one that we are all not happy with, that's financials, but this is a year, 2023, of transformation. And I guess Thomas Zimmermann will now do his job and lead you to Q3 and the guidance for 2023.
Yeah. Thank you, Bruno. I will guide you now through the financials of the first 9 months of 2023. And on the next slide, you will have an overview of the development of sales in EBITDA. And the negative development of the business continued in the third quarter of 2023. And the single pill revenues for the first 9 months are down by 35%, total revenues by 37%, and EBITDA stands at 7 million compared to 4.9 million compared to last year. On the next slide, you'll see the sales development for our 3 segments. And in total, the sales decreased by 60 million or 37%, and thereof single pills by 35%. Very positively, Tonotec HCT increased by 36%, Tonotec Lipid by 147%, and RosaRS by more than 1,000%. And the single pills, Los Amlo, Biamlo, Iltria group between 1% and 9%. However, this growth could not compensate the loss we had with Atrumip and Caamlo. And Atrumip declined by 8.4 million euro. And the supply issues continued in the third quarter. This means that we got supplies, but not the full supply. to meet the full market demand. The situation will improve from now. We are currently delivering all of our four products of Acerinox to the market, and this situation will continue. The second site in Portugal is up and running, and they are producing and shipping, and the capacity of this second site will even be doubled from the July of next year. They have bought a second production machine, which will increase the capacity by 100%. And in addition, a third site in Poland is currently under technical due diligence, and they even bought the active ingredients for Acerinox in Poland, and they intend to start the production beginning of next year. So from now on, we expect that the supply will be enough. There is still some kind of transition period so that we cannot build up a security stock. But until July, we expect to be fully deliverable and then even to improve our security stock from July next year onwards. Carmenu declined by 66% due to the tenders, and the tenders are now valid since the beginning of last year. However, in the last year, the tender winner did not have enough supply, so we benefited from it in the last year. There's very high demand, and therefore a drop this year. The cooperation business declined by 44%, and this is mainly due to the end of the Yara-Ikhantra contract end of September 2022, and this was already communicated, and the contract ended due to the expiry of the patents. And due to this, sales are down by 6 million euros. In addition, the revenue of the product Ulunar, which is distributed by us for Novartis, is down by 26% or 1.5 million euros. And this is also due to the change to a distribution model in July 2021. And therefore, we had to stop our marketing efforts. However, Ulunar has a very small margin. Therefore, any increase or decrease in sales has no real impact on our EBITDA. In compensation to this, the revenue from the fee-for-call business with Trixeo, with AstraZeneca, increased by 19% or €400,000. And this is based on more calls and also a higher price per call. However, this cooperation stopped end of October. The revenue from the fee-for-call business with Purine GmbH for the product Pentalon, which started in April 2023, was a contributor of 900,000 additional fee-for-call sales in this year. The other products are mainly down due to a divestment of Ion Gynecology business in the first quarter of 2022. The next slide gives you an overview on the quarterly basis of our revenues in 2023, and you can see a drop in single pills from 6.6 in the first quarter to 5.5 in the second quarter. And this is due to the tender and supply situation with Acerinox. Acerinox dropped by 1.1 million in the second quarter. And in the third quarter, you see an increase, and this increase is mainly caused by the better supply situation of Acerinox. Here we have an increase of €300,000, and in addition, Carmenu increased by €200,000. The cooperation business is mainly lower due to Ulunar. We had a very high stocking at the wholesaler side in the second quarter, and therefore we have here a reduction in the third quarter. Also, the Trixeo calls declined a little bit in the second quarter due to third quarter due to phasing. And in the other segment, you can see here a high Q1. This is mainly due to our product Codicaps, the cough product, and here we have a high seasonality in our product portfolio. On the next slide, you see the development of our key performance indicators, and as explained, revenues are down by 37%. And the gross profit is down by 36% or €9.5 million. And this is also the main contributor to our negative EBITDA and EBIT development. However, in the gross profit margin, we see here a small increase, and this is due to the stop of a Yara Ikanta business and lower Oyonnax sales, and they have a lower gross profit margin compared to our high margin Zingepil business. EBITDA is now at -7 million, mainly caused, as already said, by the top line development. But also we had higher expenses for wages and more people in our sales force side. And this is also what we are now addressing. Although the sales went down, it was invested further in our sales force, and it was not reduced to compensate a part or all of our drop in the sales. In addition, we have a one-off. This is the severance payment for our former CEO, and this is included in the year-to-date figures. And this net profit, we stand now at -6.2%. The next slide shows you the balance sheet and the total equity, of course, decreased by the net loss of the period, and total working capital increased by 6 million. Here, mainly due to two facts. This is inventory and also other accruals. Inventories went up due to the products we launched this year, and here we have a higher increase. And also a part of our development and licensing project costs are booked under inventories and not under long-term assets. The accruals went down mainly here to the positive impact. Last year with Atarumib Kamlo, we had to pay rebates for our products to our healthcare system. And this was switched from the 100 or 98 pack size to the 90 pack size. We don't have to pay any rebates to currently. And therefore, the rebates went down, and we had to cash out for all rebate obligations for Kamlo 89, 98, sorry, and Atarumib 100. And the equity ratio still stands high with more than 70%. The next slide gives you an overview of the operating and investing cash flow in the first 9 months. And yes, we have a very high drop in our cash of 50 million euros, and this comes mainly from the operating cash flow. And the operating cash flow is driven by the net profit we have and also the increase in our working capital. The investing flows here represent payments for milestones in our development, in our licensing projects. The next slide gives you or shows you our new guidance for 2023, based on the first 9 months results and the latest information we have from our month-to-date sales. The revenue will drop from 55.7 euro last year to 36.1 million this year. The EBITDA before restructuring expense will be at -8.6 million euros here, mainly driven by the sales development and the one-off for the redundancy payment for our former CEO. On the right side, you see here a range of our restructuring efforts. Currently, we expect savings between 6 to 7 million euros on a full year basis. And the restructuring expense, of course, depends on the structuring of the downsizing of our workforce together with our workers' council. And this depends, of course, on the conditions, but also on the persons who are going to leave our company. And therefore, here it's just cannot give you a pinpoint number currently. So this is my contribution for the first 9 months, and I hand over to Thomas Mills, who gives you an overview of the business development project.
Thanks, Thomas. Yeah, let's have a look at what's going on in the business development area. Here is now more or less confidence that we will have, as Bruno Rothschlegel already stated, by end of that year, 14 single pills in place in the German market. And you can see, if we compare that slide to our last call some weeks ago, so we informed you that rosacimib double combination was launched by end of June. But the good news is in the mid of September time point, we also introduced and launched a 12th single pill in Germany. So 12 are already on market. And also there's now good news compared to the bad news that APD-12 we announced beginning of that year. It will come in March with a delay of 8 months. It will come next week. So we're expecting the launch of that drug APD-12 by end of next week. The goods are transferred to our warehouse. And now there's good news that this product is already by end of next week on the market. And 2 weeks later, so in the last week of November, we expect the fourth new single pill in 2023 that will lead to the 14 in total, called APD19. And all the figures you can see on that slide, and you will find it on our web page and home page. Outlook to 24, then we will already have good news that we expect in the next days, the national registration of Caamlo HCT. So we would like to launch that in the first days of January, and then followed by in-licensed products, EPD15 and DO4, in the second half of that year. And also there's good news because here also good news from the authority that our own development, Caamlo Arthur Apontis, will come to market. We are confident that will happen. So by end of next year, and then we have already 18 single pills in place in Germany. And first time ever, I would like to present you two single pills which will come to the German market in 25. And if also this dream comes through, then we have in total 20 single pills in Germany. And if you remember my statement in March, April, May 2021, so 2.5 years ago, our dream was to have 20 single pills in Germany by end of 26 during the IPO. And here is then a very optimistic message that we will reach the 20 single pill portfolio already in the year 25. And perhaps we can add some more in 25. We are just in discussions internally. One statement to the cooperation business. I think you can remember my last messages in July and August that year. Thomas Zimmermann already stated that the cooperation with AstraZeneca, which leads at the end also to an ad hoc announcement by end of July, ends by end of October. The Purine business, just to remember you, is still running until at least end of March 24. So it's a current contract. Novartis is still in place for Luna by end of 24. And still the statement from my side, we are in negotiations with several companies, which these cooperations and negotiations are ongoing. And we made the internal decision to make a clear statement if a contract will be signed and is signed. And so it is too soon to tell something more about that, but you can be sure that we are striking for also building up and renew the cooperation business. I think a very good topic is was what Bruno Hochschlegel told you, new channels. What are stakeholders driving for the single pill concept, the single pill combination concept itself? We announced that we had 25% of the statutory health insurance sector already in contracts, for in total four different single pills. You can see the single pill Los Amlo is now reflected in both health insurance companies in the 25% reflection. And here we got the first pilot message, the first communication impact. It was done mid of October, so more or less 3 weeks ago, the Barmer, more or less, besides the Techniker Krankenkasse, the biggest single sickness fund in Germany, sent out to many thousands, it is five-digit thousands to my knowledge, a letter. And it is, of course, reflected in German, but the highlighted here in the boxes, in the text boxes, in the English translation, they stick to the single pill concept itself. They are highlighting again, as Bruno Rothschlegel stated, the clear, better evidence of the CURE study and the former START study, the retrospective one. And then, and also that is, I think, very impactful and impressive, they highlighted in total six advantages of a single pill for Iltria and for Los Amlo and for the whole concept as well, in comparison to the loose combination, having only one pill in place once a day. The medical guidelines, again, are also reflected in that letter. The broad range of dosages the single pill of Apontis Pharma does have. It is from the economic prescription point positive and possible to prescribe. Also for the patients itself, they have not to pay co-payments in Germany for each of the two or three single products of a loose combination. They have only to pay one co-payment per prescription. And also looking to the sustainability point, with less packages, with less transport costs, and so on, with less production costs, improving sustainability for the single pill concept. And also, that was very impressive, and it was more or less also a surprise to us. In that letter, also, the Barmer highlighted the single pill finder, that also the physicians should use the single pill finder to identify the products and the single pills combinations of Apontis Pharma to be prescribed and to be highlighted and to substitute the so-called loose combination. Now, that is in a nutshell what's going on already as a pilot in that combination. And as Bruno Rothschlegel already stressed, we would like to expand, seeing that first movements and the first successes also to other sickness funds as well.
And I think with this, we can go to the Q&A session.
Thank you very much for a detailed presentation and for clarifying the results and your further plans. We will now go on to the Q&A session, in which you will be allowed to ask your questions. For a dynamic conversation, we kindly ask you to ask to use the audio line. To do so, please click on the virtual raise your hand button. And if you've dialed in by phone, please use the key combination star key 9 followed by star key 6. And if you're not able to speak freely today, you can also place your questions in our chat box. And we already received the first questions from Mr. Kose. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. And yeah, thank you, Bruno, for those elaborations and encouraging to hear your positive findings. However, yeah, I do have a few questions. First of all, to start with your cash reserves. I mean, you will probably have more than halved your cash reserves to the end of the year if you take in the yeah, the one-off effects, which will have a cash effect for sure. So in your previous call,
Tim, you are off.
And that the cash reserves were attributed to the development projects. So what does that mean for the projects you have? And then one of your IPO targets, which you didn't mention, was the middle term guidance of 100 million and 13% EBITDA margin. So that sort of, yeah, bridges the question to where we stand with that goal at the moment.
Okay. Tim, can I ask you to repeat the first part of the question, because your sound was off for a couple of seconds. And I think you referred to the call in July, but then I couldn't hear anymore.
Yes. Well, I was referring to the cash reserves, which have gone down significantly. And then in the former calls, you said the cash reserves are attributed to your development projects. So the question there is, what does that mean in terms of your development pipeline? And that's the bridge to the question in terms of the midterm guidance. Where you see yourself there, and is that still achievable in a realistic time frame?
So first question first, if we look at the pipeline, I think we have the vast majority of projects already almost in. So what you could hear from Thomas a couple of minutes ago, to have 20 compounds in 2025 is close to reality. And of course, we have some other projects in the pipeline. The 26 projects in 2027 are still an objective we have. But nevertheless, you should give me and the newly assembled management team the chance, at least for the next 2 months, to reevaluate the pipeline for the time being. And after the first reviews I did, I don't see flaws in this. Yeah, but if it comes to cash, of course, we might need to take decision at one point in time. But it's too early to answer this question now. I'm inviting you to join our call beginning of 2024. I'm pretty sure we can be much more specific on this question at this point in time. The second question
was about the IPO.
The IPO of 100 million. Well, you will not get a statement from me today. I think it holds through the same idea. I think we have to reevaluate what are the prospects for 2026. Nevertheless, what you can count on is that our aim is to maximize growth throughout the upcoming years, which means if you ask me, will we reach 100 million in 2026? I would say, I don't know. If you ask me, will we try everything to ensure that we can reach 100 million in 2026? I would say, give a clear yes to this. Yeah. So I know that this is not the answer, maybe, that you say, okay, it's a clear statement, but we will be much more specific in beginning of 2024 on this one. Yeah. Tim, okay with this or?
Yeah. Thanks a lot for that. I have another question, sort of a shorter time frame. If we look at 2024, I mean, you will lose approximately 10 million in sales from Atoramib this year. So what do you expect to regain in 2024 of that amount? And then the second question, also looking into next year, I mean, on the corporation business, the status is more or less unchanged from the last call. So I'm wondering what's missing for having a sort of a follow up to the AstraZeneca corporation, and to what extent can you catch up sort of the lost sales you had in that part of the business in next year?
Okay, so for Atoramib, we are quite optimistic that we reach a low double digit result in millions, coming back with a ending the out of stock period. We have to take into account the tenders that are in. So I don't know if we can give a figure here, Thomas.
Yeah, also I think we can give a figure. Yeah. We expect that we can get back 30% of what we have lost this year, so that we are at around 12 million euros sales Atoramib next year. So this is what is currently in our internal planning as a scenario, and based on the better supply, but also based on our 90s pack size strategy, and that the former 100 pack size will vanish from the doctor's software, so that the doctors will switch from the 100 to the 90s. Yeah.
When it comes to corporations, Thomas mentioned it, of course, if we look at the situation of the company, it would be more than helpful to fill a gap, as you just pointed it out, Tim. And we are, of course, currently, we are always trying to find opportunities that can do exactly this, filling a gap. What is very important to note here is that the main part of our growth over the next years will come from the single pill portfolio. So whatever we do with collaborations will either fit into our strategy and our model, also cost-wise, or we will not do it. Yeah. But there is a good overlap between strategic fit for us and opportunities that we could tackle. And this is exactly what we are doing. What I would like to ask you, of course, at this point, to wait a couple of months, I would say, we would be more than happy to come up with good news on this one. But it's constantly screened and worked on. Yeah. So that's what I can tell you for the time being. Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot. I have more questions, but just one, and then I'll go back into the queue. Thomas Zimmermann, maybe, is it fair to assume the new break-even level is about 40 million in sales?
I have to say 30 or 40?
40.
We, of course, want to and have now talked to our workers' council to reduce our headcount. And therefore, our cost base will, of course, go down dramatically. Yeah? So therefore, 40 as a break-even point for EBITDA is too high. So it's lower than 40%.
40 million.
40 million, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Tim, for your questions. So we will go on with the questions of Mr. Galitsa. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking the questions. First of all, congratulations on your new role, Bruno. Thanks so much also for giving the glimpse for the plans you have for the company. I think it sounds all very logical. It obviously remains down to the execution, and I wish you all the best on that front. Coming to the questions, maybe the first one to your statement that you would be looking to return to profitability in 2024. The question number one I have is, do you look at EBITDA level or any different metric? The other one is related to that. I think for you to really achieve that, assuming that you're able to replace the roughly 4 million gross profit contribution from AstraZeneca that will fall out, and also assuming that you get through with the 6 million roughly cost savings, you would still require roughly 30 million of single pills, I think, to really attain this profitability target or break even slightly profitable. I'm just wondering how confident are you? What's the level of confidence that you can manage it? And in this context, also, I wonder if the reduced sales force is not going to be an impediment to replace the AstraZeneca contract. And last but not least, the Atoramib sort of catch-up effect that you have outlined, roughly 2 million additional in 2024. Is this one of more aggressive scenarios you have, or is that rather conservative? That was a lengthy question, but I if anything, I can elaborate.
So, Thomas, profitability for 2024. For sure, we looked into the figures, and we maybe this answers two questions at once. When analyzing the business and trying to figure out what we can achieve in 2024, we have to make assumptions or prognosis that we can reach. They need to be ambitious, of course, but they are all realistic. So reaching profitability in 2024 on an operational level, yeah, before restructuring costs, is a realistic target, and my confidence level on this one is very high. This is the first one. I think the second one was also about collaborations. The answer was if we included signed collaborations that replace AstraZeneca in our prospect for 2024. When I understood this right, the answer is no, because you might, hopefully we have more opportunities to talk and to exchange in the future. I will not promise things I cannot promise. I will always work. We will always work on things that help the company to thrive. But this would be an add-on to what we project for 2024. So yes, I'm very confident that we will be profitable in 2024 on operational level. And no, additional deals are not included in our projection for becoming profitable. And that's why I believe that we have a high chance to reach profitability and to work on further growth initiatives. And maybe I missed another question.
And only one remark, Alexander. The 4 million, I think, AstraZeneca-related cooperation is not such high. It is not 4 million in 2020.
He said 3.4.
So 3.4, okay, I understood. Yeah. 4.
But Alexander, I think I missed one of your questions.
It is reduced.
Whether the downsized sales force impedes you.
So, of course, whenever we start discussions with potential partners, we will have this in mind. We had this in mind already when we really start to screen and look into things. And what we will always, we cannot close deals where we say we have 120 people out there. That's for sure. But more and more what companies look for is a system that works seamlessly well with a high impact. Yeah? And what we build here is a extremely well-steered sales force, which is a big difference to what we had before. So it will be impactful. We will be very sharp on targets. And we will have a system in place that supports communication from different angles. So I think the model is attractive, and of course we will seek for potential deals within the scope of our model. And I'm also very confident that this will work out.
Understood. Can I just ask another one? In terms of the savings that you are targeting, do you expect already to really have the annualized savings contribution in 2024? Or should it be phasing?
We have around 85% of the saving next year.
Okay, that's clear.
Depends on the speed we have together with our workers' council, because we have a garden leave, yes, of the people, and it depends when we can really start. Is it 1st of January or is it now currently we expect 1st of March?
But the objective is, of course, to have a almost completely cleaned landscape in 2025 in terms of costs.
Okay, understood. And the last question, then I jump back into the queue. On your engagement with health insurers, how should we think about it in the context of single pills gross profit margins? I think there are clearly discounts involved. So. Mm-hmm. Do we need to calibrate our expectations when it comes to profitability of single pills?
In this case, I'd say, of course, when we want to grow profitably, all the measures we take should be overcompensated by additional sales. So if we give rebates, we will have additional sales that help us to compensate and to ensure that our margins, that the overall EBIT we have will not go down. The margin might suffer a little bit, but we are only engaging in deals with a reasonable amount of rebates. And of course, what we also do is to ensure that we take those rebates as an additional marketing measure, so to say. So it needs to be budgeted to a certain extent, so that we don't start to engage in a downward spiral with regard to our prices. That's clear.
Thanks so much.
One additional remark, Alexander, to that. So we keep the rebates as low as possible, but we tend more and more, that is also already existing and started with the Ivama and with the GWQ. We are using euro spendings from our A&P spendings then. to pay also for such collaboration.
Maybe it's an important point, Alexander. So we will ensure whatever we can to not compromise our prices, and for sure not the overall price level for our drugs, as this would be a toxic undertaking. Yeah?
Thank you, Alexander, for your questions. We will now move on to the person who've dialed in by phone ending 3999. You can unmute yourself now.
Okay, is it the question I can read?
No, no.
No, so I guess it's... Oh, yes. Now we can hear you.
Oh. Yeah, hello. Thank you very much for taking my
question. You're welcome.
So I keep it to three. So in terms of headcount, can you quantify the exact range of how many people you will let go from the sales force or maybe also from other departments? I think some overhead is also potential for reduction here. So, and my second question would be, I have to push on the co-marketing impact from this headcount reduction from my colleague. I'm wondering how attractive, and I appreciate your explanation for this before, but I'm wondering how attractive you might be as a partner in the future, and if, in your opinion, it would be possible to even achieve the highs of 2021, where you will get around 17 million in sales from the segment. And a more detailed one, the single portion still sales portion of the guidance for 24. So from your 36 million, you're aiming for how much of that would be single sales? Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first question was about the model, if we are still an attractive partner for collaborations, if I got it right, yeah?
That was the second question. Okay, the first was number. Can we give some numbers of reduction?
Okay. Well, this is subject to the negotiations with the Works Council. We gave a range for the cost reductions. I will not teach you math, but an average headcount is around 100,000 to reduce is around 100,000 euro, maybe. Well, ballpark figure. And we have a range from 5 to 8 million euros that we will need to do those changes. So the changes will be in this range. It's a substantial reduction in sales. It's a certain reduction for the internal staff, which is of course much, much smaller overall as a team. And it will result in substantial savings of 5 to 7 million. So I would calculate 100,000 average cost point per head.
Okay, thank you.
As a ballpark figure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then about the collaboration, are we able to gain collaborations with a Salesforce which is not as big as before but still substantial? The answer is yes. Yeah, the whole business is about in which target group can you have which impact. Yeah, with the new metrics we will have, with the ability to steer the sales force in a much more direct and flexible way, we will be able to do so. And the preparation we do from an organizational point is, I think it will be reflected, and we will be able to talk about this in January 2024, how we aim to remain an attractive partner. But as I said, only for those projects that don't turn out as a toxic pill, like you need to have 150 people in the field and then you get a deal. Yeah, we already saw that this is a risk. Yeah, when a deal is gone, you stay with the costs. I think we will have a good model for collaborations. Yeah.
And the third one is the percentage of single pill portfolio within the sales total.
It was for 2024, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exact percentage. Well, it will be the main part of our sales, of course, in 2024. But the exact percentage on the overall portfolio, I think Thomas has to help me with this. And you mentioned, I think, a figure for 2024. I couldn't hear it exactly.
Yeah, so of course, it depends on if we have a corporation or more than one corporation next year. And so there's not an exact figure, yeah.
But without cooperation, around 80% probably.
Yeah, without cooperation, single pills would be more than 90% next year. But I guess that it will be between 80 and 90% next year. It depends also on the model of a cooperation. Yeah, P4Call, where you only get paid per call. Yeah, so it's a low euro amount per call. But for example, if you have a marketing contract where you buy in the product, and you sell it with a margin, and we promote this product, of course, then you have also the full market value of a product, yeah? And then, of course, this can have a significant impact on the sales, yeah? And then the single pill ratio would be much, much lower. But of course, based on the earnings, it would be still very high, because the single pill business is a high margin business, and a corporation business depends if it's a distribution model or is it a fee-per-call model. So it's difficult to really to give you a full answer on it.
Okay.
Thank you. And towards the potential of or recovering some of the co-marketing corporation business sales, do you envision a scenario where you would be able to, let's say, achieve high double-digit 10, 18 million sales again in this area, or is it out of the question?
Well, if you ask me that way around, I would rather try to increase the single pill portfolio as much as we could. If there are opportunities to do so and they fit our strategic idea, I would say it's a high figure. It was 18 million in, when was this? What means, Thomas? In corporation business,
this year per September, it's 7.8 million euros. Last year, it was 14 million euros.
I think a realistic figure is probably something in the, well, if we are able to do deals and they should pay the bill, of course, a realistic figure is something in the high single digits, a million. Yeah. I would not try to stretch the company towards collaborations that then are again a reason to invest in collaborations rather than in single pills, you know, and to load costs that we might have to swallow after the end of a contract.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Much appreciated.
An additional remark, we are still attractive, of course, for conversations, negotiations, because there are not so many companies already having a Salesforce team for covering the GP area in Germany. So that is still existing, because that is the main business and the main target group for the single pill prescriptions as well. And so I think that is still an advantage of Pontus Pharma also in the future. But let's see what will happen in the upcoming weeks and months.
Okay, should we move to the next questions or?
Yes, so thank you so much so far. And at this point, a quick reminder, if you have still open topics you would like to discuss, just raise your virtual hand or place your question in our chat box, like Mr. Helfrich has done. So on behalf of him, I will just read his question. So there are three, and Mr. Wurschlinger, the first one is for you. Yes. So the question is, in your previous roles, especially at Merck Serono, have you encountered similar challenges and successfully overcome them?
Yes. I think the first probably relevant experience was taking over the business unit for neurology in Germany with a huge product, one product, but a huge business unit, 250 million sales or 238 to be concrete when I joined, with a very high risk to decline fast. The plan was twofold: restructure the sales force and the organization and ensure that the decline is, well, kind of slower than anticipated. And the result was, after 9 months, that after 1.5 years, yeah, that Rebif, the product in scope, instead of being established as number three in the market, became number one again for a couple of months. Then there were new entries, but this was foreseen. And this was done in parallel, restructuring the sales force and the organization and having a plan in place that helps to do this with customers and the market. And then actually there was a stringent row of roles I had. The next one was restructuring the oncology sales force in Germany. I did this more on a project level because I was on my way to Portugal, and it worked out as well. It was for Erbitux mainly, for antibody in colorectal cancer, head and neck cancer, and the results were absolutely, well, what was expected. We continued growth, and we came back to growth and continued growth on a mid-term and long-term range. In Portugal, I found also a situation where we had to reduce headcount in the cardiometabolic business. And this was a collaboration business that included, for example, Yalra and Icantra, which was also collaboration here for Apontis Pharma. And we successfully were able to prolong the contract. This was the first thing we did. And even though we had a contract, we were able to also reduce sales force with the same efficacy than before. So I think it was the best growing co-marketing product for Novartis in Portugal at this in those years. Later on in my times in Europe, I needed to restructure the cardiometabolic care business in those countries who still had substantial sales forces and budgets, which was mainly Eastern Europe, Eastern and Central Europe. So like countries like Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, but also Portugal and some others. And we had to cut costs from one day to the other by 25%. And we were able to maintain the high growth rates of 8 to 9% and even grow it further, double digit, 10 to 11% the year after. And the reductions were done in a way that some countries didn't have a sales force anymore. Others had a certain reduction, like Poland. But we built virtual teams. We implemented multi-channel approaches throughout countries without building organizations in every country. And I would say this was also a big success in this respect. So sorry for the long answer, but it was quite a list of tasks I had to fulfill. The next question, the Apontis organization facing the question. Will you read the next question?
Yeah, I can read the next question. So for sure. So the Apontis organization is currently facing a quite challenging situation. So far, the response and course correction have not been quick enough. How can we ensure that in the future responses will be more flexible and closely monitored?
Look me deep into the eyes. This is my job. And the fact that your analysis is absolutely right, I think it was a static model and changes were either too slow or irrelevant in terms of efficacy or what they could do and impact. This will change completely, and it starts to change already. You will see the changes, you will feel the changes, and you will also read it in the results next year. And I just gave you the example of the management team that changed big time. There is a good energy here, and being flexible and agile will be the new modus operandi. Next question, please.
Yes, the next question in the chat box from Mr. Helfrich is, do the available liquid funds prove sufficient for both the reconstructing efforts and the market introduction of the new products?
Yes, we will have a difficult year 2024 where we really have to look closely at the investments we go for in the market to foster growth, but it's sufficient. And it's absolutely sufficient to bring this company throughout a difficult year in 2024. I would not even call it a difficult year. I would call it a year of change and reorientation towards growth, which is a very positive thing. And so I just say yes. So we, of course, made the math.
All right, thank you. And we have another virtual hand again from Mr. Galitsa. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you. Just a follow-up, and I apologize that that has been asked just now. I had troubles hearing. Free cash flow and your net cash position development. Could you, talk about what do you still expect to incur in terms of net working capital, whether you're going to see build-up or release in the fourth quarter, and then also whether there are any pending development milestones. And ideally, if you could roughly guide us towards the cash position that you would think is would be in place at the end of the year.
Okay. So based on the working capital, we have the inventory, we will see here where an increase due to the new products. Yeah, and if you have new products in marketing, of course, we have more on stock. This is for sure, and the development milestone payments depend on our ongoing projects, and we have a project plan for each of our products. And of course, we are open payments this year, next year, and the following years, because the development projects last for up to 4 years.
Okay, second. I think it's the first. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. And we received another question in a chat box from Mr. Flor Chikovsky. Given the sales force is a significantly changed compared to the previous strategy, could you comment if it is reason? Is it reasonable to expect the sales to be much more backloaded next year? How quick or smoothly can you could reshape the sales strategy?
I think it's a very good question. Thanks a lot for this one. Backloaded, you mean that the development starts more end of the year or in the second half of 2024? Of course, I mentioned it beforehand. Whenever we change a system and we set it up and it starts running, we have a delay of effect. On the other hand, And then, of course, we expect that things become better over time in 2024. And I would not call it backloaded. I would say that we see better growth rates at the end of 2024, maybe than beginning. On the other hand, we always deal with launches. So if we launch new products in end of Q1 or so, this new organization will already pick this up and hopefully make a change. And this is not hope, this is a plan, of course. So that fast uptake with specific products might happen earlier. In the overall sum of the portfolio, I guess that our growth rates will increase towards the second half of 2024 and, of course, beyond. Yeah. And how fast can we do this? Believe me, we will be pretty fast. So Q1 needs to be the quarter where the whole organization already starts to work in the new setup. And of course, there are always things to fix and to see, but we will also implement a continuous improvement process that helps us to tackle flaws, fast and at a very early point in time. So if you ask me that way, I would say in April 1st, the organization is exactly what it should be, including the ability to adapt and change if needed. So I hope this answers your question.
Thank you so much. And as we have not received any further questions, we come to the end of today's earnings call. Thank you, everyone, for joining, listening, and for showing up. If further questions arise at a later time, please feel free to contact the investor relations team or us. And also a big thank you to the gentlemen. that you've took the time to answer all these questions and for your presentation. So I wish you all a lovely remaining week and hand over again to Mr. Wurschlegel for some final remarks.
Yeah, big thank you from our side for your continued interest in Apontis Pharma and our future endeavor, which you could see is growth and profitable growth. And I want to just remind us all on a couple of points that I think are important in this situation. First of all, you learned already that we have to differentiate in 2023 between one-time effects that we are tackling and the normal business dynamic we see. And I hope I could outline how we will tackle the normal business development with the organization we have. But in addition, and this is an important point and would have been too much maybe for this earnings call, commercial excellence is a big topic also for Apontis Pharma, and we will tackle all issues or suboptimal processes we see and have in this company, because there's also some money in this, and I'm pretty optimistic that we can improve operations at this point and also save some money or gain some money from those activities. We are, and this was asked a lot of time, we are looking constantly in opportunities to increase revenues beyond our portfolio. This is a task that this team has, and we are following up on this very seriously. And of course, we would be more than happy to share good news on this one, maybe in the next call, beginning of January. The first call in 2024. We know that the results in 2023 are disappointing, and honestly, we don't expect you to be excited. Yeah? But what we want to do is we want to invite you to stay engaged with Apontis Pharma and with us, and also curious how this company transforms and comes back to operational profitability in 2024, and of course thrives for the benefit of patients, investors, and the team that is eager to build this success. So thank you very much for your continued interest, and I hope and we hope to see you next time in January for the next call. Thank you very much.